All right. It gives me great pleasure to announce Lindy M from the Pomo.
My name's Lindy. I'm an alcoholic. And the most chaotic area is my area. Kind of the story of my life. Just real quick, so I wanna congratulate my sponsor, Janet, on 34 years.
Yes.
And just real quick, I want everybody that is sponsored by Janet or that goes down in the history under me and under my sponsees to stand up real quick.
Yes.
So this is how Alcoholics Anonymous works. We come in with one person with time, and that person with time hands it down to another person, and another person, and another person, and that's how we give it back. Who were the newcomers? All right, newcomers, you guys are the most important people in the room, and the reason why I believe you're the most important person in the room is because without newcomers, there aren't old-timers. You know, this program was started by a couple men that came in and decided to give back to others. And by giving back to others, look what they've done. You know, I'm not just an alcoholic. I'm so much more. So much more. And, you know, those of you that know me will always hear me, you know, most of the time I start my story was, you know, I do AA, NA. Odele, fucking A. Maybe a few essays. I couldn't resist that shit, man. You know, and the thing that I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is I came in here and I have a sense of humor. You know, and what's really cool about Alcoholics Anonymous is all the stupid shit we've ever done. We come to meetings and we share it and we can laugh at ourselves.
That's right.
You know, before I got here, I would go to, I love the bars. I'm a bar drinker. Yeah. You know, I like to go to the bars and have a few cocktails and think I could shoot pool really well. I think maybe I did. I just really don't remember. I like to go to the bars and I like to dance because I thought I'd dance better drunk. I'm not sure. I can't remember that either. Oh my God. So anyway, I just wanted to point this out though. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, when it was first founded, they had all these people to put this book together, right? And one of the things I always like to focus on is it doesn't matter what our substance is. I don't suffer from just a single substance. I suffer from the ism, the I, self, and me. That is my problem. When I first got here, when I first started, I drank. And then from drinking alcohol, it progressed. And it continued to progress, but it would always go back to alcohol too. You know? But our book specifically says on page 410, in the story of acceptance was the answer, it says, so I immediately started taking and shooting pet pills. God, I think I did that. Eventually, I was taking 45 milligrams of the long-acting Benzedrine and 45 of the short-acting just to get out of bed in the morning. I took more during the day just to increase the high and more to maintain it. When I overshot the mark, I'd take tranquilizers to level off. The pet pills affected my hearing at times. I couldn't listen fast enough to hear what I was saying. Shit, I'd done that too. I think I still do that. I wonder why I'm saying that again, and I've already said it three times. Still, I couldn't turn my mouth off. And it continues. So my main thing is I don't want to focus on what I drank. I don't want to focus on what I used, because we've all been there. We all know what it's like to feel those feelings of incomprehensible demoralization. You know, and it doesn't matter if I was drinking, and it doesn't matter if I was shooting dope. None of that mattered. What mattered is where I ended up. And it wasn't pretty. You know, I didn't wake up one morning and say, my life is so fucking wonderful, I think I'm going to get sober today. That shit didn't happen. You know, but there was a lot of mornings I woke up and I thought, man, I really need some help. You know, those of you who know, so I'm going to give you a little history. I was born in this little bitty town. And that little bitty town was called Wasco, California. You know, I started off fucked, any way you look at it, you know? And there was a few people, my sponsor, one of the reasons I picked her, she was only like 7 miles down the road, but truthfully, yeah. If we'd known each other then, we would have been fighting.
That's
Wasco
right.
And Shafter didn't like each other.
That's right.
You know? So I came from that little bitty town, but I really didn't grow up there. After my mother and father divorced, when I was 3 months old, my mom moved over here to San Luis Obispo. So most of my actual growing up was from kindergarten to ninth grade was in San Luis. But then somewhere along the line, you'll probably hear later on in my story, is I'll talk about my dad. My dad is my dad. And those of you that have stepchildren, it doesn't matter who was there when your mom got pregnant. What matters is who's there for you as you grow up. You know, my biological father was the one that was from the valley. I really do believe he did the best he could, but he didn't know how to be a dad. You know, so I call him my biological father because my dad is the one that raised me and is still there for me today. I love that man. Even though there was times when I hated him, I love that man. You know, so I have a sobriety date. It is 11/2 of 1997. I have found, as long as I'm willing to come in and do the work, that I'll be able to keep that date. I have not had the experience of going back out, but that doesn't mean it couldn't happen if I didn't pay attention. I am so scared of going back to where I came from. I am willing to go to any lengths and follow direction and make sure I don't go back there. Because the last place I got arrested was Oildale. You know? And I'd like to think I was really, really cool at the end right there, but you know, riding around on a bicycle with a baby seat at 3 a.m. in Oildale is not what you call on the high end of your lows. You know? My bottom was a pretty deep bottom. The only thing I think could have been further is if I'd died. Because at that point when I was at the end, I had no self-worth, I had no self-respect, I had no children with me, and I at that time was the mother of three already. And when I say a bicycle with a baby seat, that's because my youngest daughter was not with me at the time. My mother had her too. And my two older children had been removed from my care because I was not a good mom. You know, and I'd like to say they took my kids, and I'd like to get really indignant and real angry about it, but the truth is they did not take my children, I gave them away. And that was one of the things that kept me the loadedest, the longest. Because if I would have stopped and if I would have allowed myself to come down and if I would have really looked at the choices I made, I might have had a little bit of guilt and a little condemnation, so I wasn't coming down. And I did everything within my power to make sure that I was able to stay that way. You know, and I wasn't one of those people that always had a house. And if I did have a house, usually the electricity was off and I was stealing that shit from the neighbors, you know, with a really long electric cord. Just wait till they go to sleep so I'd go plug that shit into their porch light. You know, I was one of those people that would do a lot of drugs and stay up all night and end up on the roof. Someone reminded me of that story earlier, yeah. We're getting a new roof, so I thought I needed to get up there with a claw hammer and pull every nail out. I think I might have got them all. I really think I might have, you know. you know what I really like is the fact that we're all laughing about that because we've all had some sort of similar experience. We've all done some sort of stupid shit, you know. It was really hard when those children were removed from my care, but as long as I stayed loaded, I didn't have to deal with it. And that's still kind of one of those coping skills that I brought with me in recovery because it's really good to, when something happens or somewhere or somehow, that I would just shut down the way I feel and ignore it. And if I ignored it long enough, it wasn't real. But coming in here and getting a sponsor and doing some step work, we learned that stuff that we squish, that stuff we ignore is the stuff we get loaded over. You know, and so I had a family member, I won't mention who, I'd been in recovery a while, and I went to go help her daughter, and her daughter didn't want me to help her the way I wanted to help her, and she called me to remind me that I forgot where I came from. And You know what? That's the furthest from the truth. I have not forgotten where I came from, nor do I ever hope I never do, because I remember where that was. I remember what it was like when I moved into that person's house that I was living with. Her daughter had gone to her parents' house to go visit, and I moved in and took over. You know, and people wanted me around, but they didn't really want me around. They let me in, and then they wished they could get me out. I was really hard to get out once I dug in. And I was living in her house, and I knew that it was getting really, really bad. And I knew that I just didn't want to do it anymore. And I found myself, you know, on my knees saying, God, I just can't do this anymore. Please help me. And I had my 2-year-old daughter with me at the time. And I went to sleep. And the next day, of course, now, you know, welfare moms, we used to actually get these paper things called checks. You know, and the next day was Mother's Day. That's what we called the first, because we get the check. You know, and we get our paper checks and we get our paper food stamps, you know, and we were hooked up. And I woke up on Mother's Day and it's like, oh, I'm getting paid. I guess I really don't need all that help right now. God, don't worry. I got this. You know, how many people ever told God, don't worry about this. I got this, right? Well, he has a sense of humor. And he told me, no, you ain't got this. So I went and bought groceries because that's what I like to do when I got my food stamps, make sure I didn't spend them on other stuff. And my daughter, Charlie, my 2-year-old, was at the next door neighbor's house playing with some other kids, and probation came and hit the house. You know, and they hit the house for someone that used to live there. That was where God has the sense of humor. You know, they hit the house for someone that used to live there, and they got me. I had felony warrants out of San Luis Obispo County, and I got hooked up and taken to jail. You know, and this is a part I forgot. You know how it's funny, after you've been sober a while, you kind of forget some of the shit that you did, you know? It kind of just kind of floats away. Well, I was talking the other night, and I remembered that when I went to jail, that my 2-year-old was at the next door neighbor's house, and I didn't know where she was going or what would happen to her. I had no control over it. And I didn't know for a really long time what happened to her. You know, and child welfare services isn't like it is now. And I remember now what happened. My connection came back and saw her there and took her with him and made sure she got to my biological father, who made sure she got to my mom. You know, but when I went to jail, I didn't know that. I didn't know where she was. You know, and that was another one of those things I would shut off. You know? But I did go to jail, and I remember sitting in Kern County Jail, and I remember thinking my life is over. I knew I had felony warrants out of San Luis County. I knew that San Luis County would go a really long ways to come pick up people with warrants. And they came at me with some charges. Apparently someone had stolen a 68 Camaro from some chick that might have been having an affair with her husband. I don't know what happened to that car. I did tell him that if it had been me, though, it'd probably be in little bitty pieces all over the state of California by now. But, you know, I really didn't know what happened to it. So they dropped the charges. But they did get me on an under the influence, and so they gave me 90 days. And in that time, I did a 1381 form to have San Luis County come get me, and they didn't. You know, it was the strangest thing, too. You're sitting in San Luis in Kern County Jail, and I don't know if you guys know Kern County Jail, Laredo facility. It's like a little prison, you know. In that time, I thought San Luis County was going to come get me. So I figured, you know, I'm going to prison. So why am I going to bother to stay clean and sober? So somebody decided they were going to, I went to court and came back with tobacco. Let's not talk about how I got it in the county jail. And then somebody else in the jail next to me came in with some meth. Let's not talk about how they got it in the county jail. And so I did a little trade. So Halloween of 97, I decided I had one of those bright ideas. Any of you guys know what those bright ideas are like? I had this bright idea that I should get loaded in a little 8x5 cell. Fucking stupid. And I was stuck in that little 8x5 cell, spinning. And I thought, oh my God, what am I doing? You know, but the truth is I thought I'm going to prison, so we're gonna do whatever we wanna do. And so I did, I got high that night. And then, in December, I'd been sentenced to 90 days for being under the influence, and San Luis County I kept waiting for San Luis County to come and get me, and they never did. And they came in, and I left a little part out. When I got arrested that time, you know, I had a whole lot of warrants and stuff, so I thought I'd go in into my cousin's name. Oops. Fingerprints don't lie, though. They figured out I wasn't her really fast. It took me a long time before I even told her about that shit. I had to make that amends. But, you know, I'd been introduced to a little bit of recovery fellowships, you know, by people coming in and doing H&I. And I still really didn't know what it was. I didn't really understand what meetings were. I know when I was partying in five cities, people would go to meetings and come to my house and drink or do drugs or whatever else we were doing. So I thought, you know, that it was all but just a bunch of bullshit and people weren't really sober or clean in those meetings. And I found out different later. But they came, I thought I was supposed to get transported, and the next thing you know, they come and tell me, McDaniel, roll it up. Yeah, and I told you I was here under her name. Oops, that was funny shit, man. That still cracks me up. It might not make you guys laugh, but I think it's fucking hilarious. But they told me to roll it up, and you know, I don't know if any of you guys who have done any jail time, they've seen people come in. I've seen people, they tell them, come in and roll it up because they didn't have time to file charges or whatever. And they'll take you and they dress you out and they walk you out in handcuffs and rearrest you and bring you back in. I thought that's what was going to happen. I mean, that's what should have happened. You know, but I've been praying and, you know, it's like, okay, God, whatever's going to happen, I'm okay with that. And next thing you know, I'm standing out in front of Kern County Jail in Doc Martens and paper pants. That's right. Okay, so the paper pants part, when I went in, I was really skinny. When I came out, not so much. So my ass didn't fit in my size 0 pink acid wash Wranglers, which, by the way, I still have in my cedar chest at home because I don't ever want to forget where I came from. And so I'm standing out in front of that county jail, and that's when you have to make, you know, they talk about that moment of clarity, right? There's that moment of clarity when you know you're done, when you know you want help, and you know you just don't want to do this shit anymore. And I had that moment of clarity standing out in front of that jail. They, you know, I had the homies, you know, like 5 minutes away. All I had to do was pick up the phone and call them, and they would have been right there to pick me up. All my stuff was at their house, everything. Or I could say, someone help me. And my parents hadn't let me come home in a really long time. And I called my mom. You know, I said, Mom, I just can't do this anymore. I need help. You know, and so she said, let me talk to your dad, and she did, and they came and got me. And in that car ride back over here to the coast, you know, I had a lot of time to think, but you know, the felony warrants that I had that I'd gotten arrested on still hadn't gone away. You know, I had gotten, when I lived in the over here at the coast before I moved back to the valley that time, I'd gotten raided, and I'd gotten possession with intent to sell. And I'd never finished taking care of that stuff. So I had to go turn myself in. And I even went to some of the sober livings here in town and stuff, and I just didn't get it. I didn't really know what that was. You gotta figure this is 1997, so recovery, sober livings, treatment programs, all that stuff. None of that, all that stuff was still kind of new. And I went and looked at them. I thought, no, this isn't for me. And so I called my probation officer, and I went in, and do you know how hard it is to turn yourself in when you are sober? Yeah. Man, I have gone to jail tons of times. I am one of those people that I don't know how to be sneaky. There ain't nothing sneaky about me. Everything I do out loud, you know. County sheriffs knew it. San Luis PD knew it. Kern County PD figured it out pretty fast. I don't do anything quiet. So I went and I turned myself in, and I thought, they're going to say, oh, Lindy, good job. We're so proud of you since you came and turned yourself in. We're just going to let you go ahead and go home. That is so not what happened. There is nothing worse than sitting in a holding cell, waiting to get booked, stone cold sober. Back and forth, back and forth. Somebody just get me housed. You know, there was no sleeping on the floor with the toilet paper roll. You know, there was none of that. And they did, and they put me in jail, and then I had to go back to court, right? And so I go back to court on Christmas Eve of 1997. And the judge, though, he thought I did really good by coming and turning myself in. You know, and my mom's sitting out in the audience. The reason I also had another felony charge, it was willful disobedience of a court order. I'd had my my only son at the time with me in Bakersfield, and I hadn't been able to get him back because the car I had broke down, so his dad had filed kidnapping charges on me. And those charges had never been taken care of either. So they weren't going to let me out. But they did take my warrant from 50,000 down to 1,000. And my mom was sitting out there, and I remember seeing her sitting out there, and I remember her looking at me, and they say, you know, it's Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas, right? For $100, I could get out. And she looked at me, and she goes, and I knew it wasn't a good idea for me to go home. I knew it wasn't a good idea for me to walk out because I had no foundation. I had no real sobriety. You know, what, a month? Because I'd gotten loaded in jail. You know, I didn't know what I was doing, and I was afraid to get back on the streets, and I told her, no, don't get me out. So I stayed. And I don't like to sit in court either. I freaking hate going to court in those handcuffs. And I'm one of those people that can fall asleep sitting straight and wake myself up snoring. With the bailiff looking at me like, what? And I'm like, whoa. You know, so I always plead out, yep, I did it. I did it. Sentence me. You know, and they did. And they sentenced me to, what did I get? I got 4 months. So and at that time, we did 2/3 of our time. So I was there for 3 months. And in that time, you know, both fellowships brought in meetings. And in that time, there was a girl that was coming in on weekends, and she was talking about cleaning up her wreckage. I didn't know what the fuck wreckage was, but, you know, all right, we got to clean up something. And my behavior, I don't know. We need to clean up something. And she talked about the fellowship. She talked about recovery. She talked about having over a year sober and changing her life. And I used to party with her, and I thought, man, if this bitch can do it, I know I can. Right? And then I thought, man, I don't want to go to those stupid meetings. I am not going to know anybody there. Why would I want to walk into those meetings and I don't know no one? And she looked at me and she told me, you know, just look at it as a room full of friends you haven't met yet. And I look around this room and I think I know about 85% of the people here. You know, and I really want to thank all the people that got together and went and had dinner with me before. And I want to thank all the people that are here because they know me. And I want to thank all you new people for giving yourself a break and coming in here. And when I got out of that jail that time, I went to my first meeting, and I walked into my first meeting. There was all kinds of people there I knew. I'm like, whoa, where you been? What you doing? What's up? You know, and they looked at me, and they just told me, we've been saving you a seat. And so I got into recovery, and then they started talking about sponsors. I'm like, man, I don't trust no bitches. I know what they do. They want my alcohol, they want my drugs, they want my clothes, they want my old man, they want something. And I was not willing to trust women. You know, but I did trust enough that I didn't want to do what I was doing anymore, and I did trust enough that I was willing to follow direction. So if that's what they told me to do, then I was going to go ahead and give it a try. And I did that. You know, I got a sponsor. I did some step work. You know, I got a little job. I ain't never worked. Shit. Works for wimps. We don't work. You know, I worked hard at it because I had to be, you had to do a lot of work to stay in the condition that I like to be in. You know, but I didn't do no job. And when I did go to a job, it would be lucky if I stayed long enough to get paid. But I'm sure I could paid myself out of the till more than enough. You know, but I didn't have any real jobs. I got a job. I got a little minimum wage job. You know, I didn't fill in a whole lot of my childhood to you because, you know, really that childhood, I'll just give you a little piece of it. You know, my mom married my dad when I was real little. I was around 5. And I was severely pigeon-toed.
Still am.
And at that time, they put braces on your legs. Like Forrest Gump. I mean, full-on thing around your hips, go down the side of your legs, strap down, you know, orthopedic shoes. You know, in first and second grade, that is not the coolest thing to be wearing. And children are cruel. Yeah. Children are fucked up. You know? And so I went, and on top of that, I was in Catholic school. So for first and second grade. So I definitely wasn't one of the cool kids then. You know, and I found my escape in books. I love to read today still. I would rather read a book. I hardly ever turn my TV on. I would rather read a book. And you know why? It's another form of escape, and sometimes I can find that being just as addictive. But so when I was in grammar school and junior high school, I read a lot. You know, but I was also one of those picked on kids, you know, in junior high, all these other girls are wearing dittos and it's all feel the fit and shit, you know what I mean? And I'm wearing homemade stretchy waist pants and I'm not one of the cool kids, you know? I didn't fit in, I got picked on. So I found out that if I bought a bottle of booze, you know, and a four-finger lid of some, you know, some real good commercial, then all of a sudden now I'm one of the cool kids. You know, and I did that I just wanted to fit in. You know, I just wanted to be liked. I just wanted someone to let me be part of. And by doing that, I was. And so I started getting loaded at 11. You know, I was one of those kids that started school at 4 instead of 5. So I started getting loaded at 11. I started drinking booze. I started smoking cigarettes. I started smoking weed. And those things, the minute I took that first drink, it was like all of a sudden, all the uncool just slid off. And now I thought I was funny. I think I'm pretty. I think I'm smart. And all of a sudden, I just was part of it, you know? And that worked for me. And that worked for a really long time until it didn't. I love when I heard someone say, you know, first we started doing this shit because it was fun. Right? I had fun. I had fun drinking. I had fun partying. I had fun all of a sudden. Now I'm cute. I had fun going to the bars when I was underage. I had fun going to the bars when I was of age. And then all of a sudden, I got arrested. So now we're having fun and we got some problems. You know, but I could really overlook those problems because as long as I stayed drunk and was partying, I forgot all about that getting arrested. I didn't pay the fines, I didn't go to court, I just forgot about that shit till the next time I got stopped and got rearrested and had to stay in jail for the shit that I ignored, you know? So there went from fun to fun with problems, and then it turned into just problems. You know, and I think about those last couple years, there was nothing fun about that shit. It was a job. I had to do what I had to get up and I had to do what I needed to do to get booze or dope or whatever it was that I was doing. Now it's just a problem and now I have to do it in order to just survive. You know, or I'm gonna be sick or I'm gonna sleep, you know, and there were times, you know, and I'm gonna share just little pieces of this because I know it used to be something I used to highlight, but it's something I do need to share. My two older children were removed from my care, right? I was down to my 2-year-old, and I remember spending so much time in the bathroom, and this little 2-year-old, seeing this little 2-year-old's finger coming under the bathroom door, "Mommy, I'm hungry." That's reality, that's what I did. I had a lot of people around my house that were all doing drugs. We were, you know, we were IV drug users. My son had found some methamphetamine and I took the baggie out of his mouth and he walked back and forth all night long. And I kept thinking, shit, I needed to take him to the hospital, but I couldn't because I was afraid. Maybe that's why he's so crazy now. No, he's not crazy. He's a good kid. No, he's a joke. Matter of fact, he just got out of the Navy. He's doing great. But, you know, that's not the point. And then I had... I think I'm funny. You know, I gotta mix the sad with the humor. You know what I mean? Because I'm not here to tell you about how miserable it was. I'm here to tell you that I survived all my own damage, and so did my children. There's another part, though. This is just something I just came to deal with in the last couple years. I said we were IV drug users, and apparently my oldest daughter at one point must have come in contact with a contaminated syringe, and in high school after I got her back, she tested positive for hepatitis C. And I really at that time was not able to deal with that shit. I could not have been me. I know her dad was loaded. I know her stepmom was loaded. It had to have been someone else. It could not have been me. It was me. And in high school, she went through that first hepatitis C treatment, the one that made everybody so deathly ill. And she went to college, and she was part of the family, and she took that medicine, and she didn't get mad at me. And she what's really horrible about that is I let her shoulder that because I wasn't able to. She's clear as a virus. It's never come back. A couple years ago, I was able to do the newer treatments, and I'm no longer Hep C positive. It's gone. It'll never come back. And I was able to sit down with my daughter, and I was able to tell her, I am so sorry. That was my fault. And you know what? She loves me anyway. Kids are amazing. You know, she's 34 years old. She's like one of my best friends. And she is the child of an alcoholic father and an alcoholic and drug addict mother. And she does not, and she doesn't, she's not angry with me. I am encouraging her, though, to do some Al-Anon or some of the other stuff, you know, and maybe walk through some of the stuff. She's still more mad at her dad than she is at me. But you know what? I'm still able to be there for her today. So that's the hard stuff. You know, now we get to go back to I had a job. I had a fucking job. I got my first job in after I got out of jail and I'm sober was at a bookstore. See, it all tied together now, right? So if I'm going to have to get a job, at least they're going to give me one at a bookstore. So I get all my shit for free now, right? But I did. I got that little job. It was a little minimum wage job. It was like $7 an hour. You got to figure this is the late 90s, right? And I was so proud of myself, and I saved my money, and my parents had let me stay home. They didn't make me go into recovery home. I did outpatient treatment for a year in San Luis County. They've got a women's program called POGUE. First thing I ever finished, by the way. Oh, except for pregnancy, and the only reason I finished that shit is because I didn't have a choice. But I finished that program, and I graduated from it. And from that little minimum wage job, my parents have a dry cleaners and laundry in San Luis, and they haven't let me work for them in a really long time. But they let me go to work for them, and I worked for them for 5 years. I was one of the best employees. I learned how to get up and go to work even when I didn't feel good. You know, that was hard. But you know what? You don't go to work, you don't get paid. So I liked getting paid, and I bought me a little hoopty, man. That was really exciting because that little hoopty started with a fucking key. And the door locked and unlocked, you know, and nobody stole it. It got my old, one of my old hoopties got stolen all the time. I have to go steal that shit back, you know. gotta love Wildell, right? And came back with, never mind, we won't go there. But so I went from there, and then part of my story is, since my older two children had been removed, I had the two-year-old. Once I got sober and I got out of jail, my oldest daughter's father and his wife would not let me see my daughter. They didn't let me see her for 8 years. And I'm not saying that that wasn't the right thing. And actually, I'm really grateful to them for being willing to take care of my child because I was unable to. And the same with my son. My son is 7 years younger than my oldest daughter. And his dad had removed him from my care also. And so after I had a year sober, I decided it's time for me to get my rights back. You know, my son's father had brought him over. You know, it really broke my heart. They brought him over to come see me after I'd gotten out. It had been a while since I'd seen him, and I opened the door. I'm so excited to see him. And it had been a while since he'd seen me, and he ran right past me and ran to my mom. Didn't even know it was me. Consequences of my decisions. Then my oldest daughter was living in Idaho with her dad and stepmom, and her stepmom and I hated each other. That bitch. After I had over a year sober, I you can't go in and represent yourself in Idaho. You have to have an attorney. I got an attorney. I went back in, and I went back in for visitation. And the stepmom comes in with this big old packet of all these letters I wrote her while I was in jail. You know, dude, I've been out of jail for a year. I've been paying my child support. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. All I want is visitation, and the judge gave it to me. I had to pay for her flights there and back, no problem. And so I got my visitation back with her. And during that time, of course, I start dating a little over a year sober. After a little over a year, oh no, I'm surprised. That would only happen with that husband. The other one's not so much. But after almost 2.5 years, I got married to Travis. Some of you guys know him, some of you don't. Wonderful man. He really, really is. But my daughter was coming and visiting us. And here's where shit really gets funny, because, you know, I had my youngest daughter. She was 2 when him and I first started dating. I had my older 2 children, which were now coming back into my life. Then he had a daughter. We got married, and I had 1 more. So I went from only having 1 kid to 5. And all I ever wanted was get all my kids together under 1 roof. Shit, be careful what you ask for. I got them all and some extras, you know. Fuck, I don't even like kids. But after that daughter came and visited, she did her visits and everything like she was supposed to. She loved coming and hanging out with us. One time her stepmom didn't want to let her come down. And I got on the phone, because I usually dealt with the stepmom, because it's, look, I don't want to cause any problems because of you with him. Let's deal with each other. You know what I mean? Really, I don't want him. If I did, we would have still been together. You know, what do we got to do to make this work? And she says, nope, she ain't coming. She's working, and we paid for baseball and all this other shit. And I'm like, I have a tendency just to ignore stuff and let it go. Okay, never mind, whatever. You know, because my self-worth was nothing. I'm a fucked up parent. You know, I've done all this terrible stuff. But I had a little bit of self-esteem, a little bit of self-worth, because this program gave it to me. And I told him, look, I have a court order. I have a court order right here. You had 24 hours to get that kid on the damn plane, or I'm going to get up there and I'm going to file contempt of court charges on you, and then we'll see where this goes. He put her on the plane. First time I ever really stood up for myself in an appropriate manner. You know, and she came down. She was 16 at that time, and she didn't want to go back. Her dad and stepmom were active in their alcoholism, and it was ugly. And you know, ugly for when she was little with me, ugly in the middle with her dad, you know, and now she's back and there's a semblance of normalcy. And I don't want to go back. And I said, all right, well, let's see what we need to do. And I hired another attorney. And I shared this with Janie earlier at dinner. The highlight of my recovery. That child wrote a letter to the judge. She's 16 years old, and she told the judge that her mom had earned the right to be her mom again, and she wanted to go home. You know, and that's, there ain't nothing fucking better than that. I'll tell you that shit right now. You know, because that poor kid, kids are forgiving, you know? They really, really are. And that same child is, 34 years old, almost 35. She's got two kids of her own. We have an amazing relationship. Matter of fact, she's a world traveler, like crazy world traveler. And she went to Europe when she graduated. Oh, I gotta finish this part. So that bitch stepmom, let's talk about her for just a second. So, y'all gonna like this part, really, the way it changes. So, after Amber finished high school, she went to Cal Poly. You know, and the stepmom had called me, and I'm like, and I told her, look, I'd gotten Amber's cell phone, and I said, you know, I don't like you, you don't like me, we're cool, right? So she has her own phone. You want to talk to her, you call her there. Don't call this number. All good. Well, when that same daughter graduated from Cal Poly a few years later, guess who was there together?
That bitch.
That's right. You know what? That bitch and me and her dad's mother, her dad's sister, all got together, and we all went to fucking Hawaii, had a great time. You know, she was doing what she felt she needed to do to protect her child because she loved her. And I have utmost respect for that. And you know what? I just went up there. My daughter was temporarily living with them in Spokane, and I went up there and I stayed with them while my daughter had her last baby, and we're friends. And I was able to sit and talk to her and sit and talk to her dad and make some a little bit of amends for whatever I put them through, and to thank them for doing what they did to be there for my daughter. And she's not a bitch anymore. But that's not because of anything I did. That's because of this program. You know, and after she came back and lived with me, so now I got all these five damn kids under the same roof and they're at each other's throats. So I decided my husband at the time worked offshore. I thought, you know what, I'm going to go to school full time. I'm going to work full time. I'm going to have these five kids, and he's going to work offshore. Talk about overachievers. Shit. You know, but I did go to school, and then I eventually got a job, and I ended up working out at CMC for a while doing treatment out there. Hated that job. Ugh, that was awful. But by doing that, it made it so I could finish school, and then I went to work for one of the treatment centers here, and I've been doing treatment since 2001. A dope fiend, alcoholic, like me, that never held a job, has now been employed consecutively since 1999.
That's right.
Shit, who does that? Yeah, yeah, from Wasco. Don't forget that part. Hey, you know, we do recover. You know, a lot of things have happened in the last 10 years since I got all the kids back, since I was employable. You know, I have a lot of really bright ideas. You know, I had bright ideas to get loaded so I could fit in. I had bright ideas to steal shit. I had bright ideas to get married multiple times. So, relationships. I got a few more minutes, right? So, relationships are not my forte. They're not my strong point. I've been married and divorced four times, three in recovery. Don't start. And you know what? I can laugh at it, and I think I'm done now. But in each and every one of those was when I was still getting loaded, and that's my two-year-old. That was the father of my two-year-old. And then I got married to Travis, and we were married for 10 years. And after that marriage broke up, it was kind of a really big rebound, right? So I got into this other, I think it should have been an annulment, not a marriage. But he was really, really cute. We understand some of that, right? Looks really good writing letters. All right. Frank, I'll be honest, you look really good with nothing but the radio on either, so, you know. Obviously, that relationship didn't last very long, you know. And then the last marriage, most of you guys, a lot of you guys know because we were in here together, and it started out really, really good until it wasn't. You know, when we quit working a program, when control issues come up, when neither one of us are taking care of our spiritual condition, shit goes to hell. And it didn't work out. You know, I learned a lot from each and every one of those relationships. And the main thing that I learned out of those relationships is the only common denominator in them was me. Shit. So that told me I had some work to do. And it wasn't about working on him. It was about working on me. And what do I need to do to be okay? You know, and after that last relationship broke up, I've been single over 4.5 years. But I also figured out something else, too. After that last divorce, shit, I bought a house. I bought a new car. How'd that happen? Because I focus on learning how to take care of myself because I really like to help other people. Let me help you. Oh, you don't have a car? Let me buy you one. You know, stupid shit. But but today I've worked on me and I'm okay today. You know, my life is good. And then I gotta share this. So my friend Jessica and I had just started hanging out, right? And after hanging out a little while, she says, "Hey, you know, I need a sponsor." And I said, "Okay." She goes, "Well, would you be my sponsor?" I said, "Well, let me tell you one thing. If you're looking for some guidance in a relationship, you're looking at the wrong person. I can't help you there. I do not know how to do that. But if you're looking on some guidance through the steps and how to remain sober, I can help you with that." You know, and in that, I've got to watch her and Bud. And I've been able to step outside and watch that relationship grow and learn how to have a healthy relationship by watching them. And also reminding myself why I like to be single. Relationships are a lot of work. You know what? They really are. A good, healthy relationship requires communication. A good, healthy relationship, you need to have allowances for each other. And you got to learn how to share a closet. I ain't sharing my closets. I got two. Actually, there's six in my house, and I've got three of them. You know? You know, and the truth is I'm not against another relationship. I believe that my God has plans for me. And whether that plan is to be in a relationship or whether that plan is to be single, I'm okay with that. I'm happy. This is the happiest I've ever been in my life. And this last few years have been a struggle. You know, recovery isn't simple. You know, and I also want to talk real fast about a God of my own understanding. I have this amazing God. You know, and that amazing God stuck with me when I was getting loaded because I'm still alive today. And I did say Wasco Bakersfield, right? Shit was a lot crazier there, especially in the 90s. And I would come in after someone got shot. I would come in after they'd been strong-armed robbery. And it was always right after it happened or I left right before it did. So I believe I have a God that was protecting me then. And it's the same God I have today. You know, and some people talk about, you know, make that higher power whatever's going to work for you. What, a doorknob or the ocean or whatever. You know, I'm sorry, that is not powerful enough for me. I need something a lot bigger than that. My God needs to create the heavens and the earth and all that shit. You know what I mean? And that's the God that I have in my life today, and that God has worked. You know, I have peace today. I've never had peace when I was out there doing what I was doing. When that shit quit being fun, there was no peace. I have serenity. You know, I can go home and I walk into my house and it's like, I'm safe. You know, that was one of my biggest things when I was, from being a kid till to now, was I just want to be safe. You know, and I don't want to have to depend on someone else to make me that way. I'm safe. You know, and whoever hangs out with me or is in my circle, I can't say I keep my circle small because that would be total bullshit. Look around the room, you know. But you know, we can't pick our relatives, right? We related to who we be related to, right? Blood don't lie, but we get to pick our family. And even if you weren't a relative, you would still be family. And I want to tell you, if you want the gifts that this program has to offer, then you've got to overcome the fear. You got to overcome everything else that tells you you got to control shit. Because if you're controlling it, you ain't doing a very good fucking job. You're here. Shit ain't, something ain't working. So where is it? One last thing and I'm going to end. They said I could go to quarter after and you know I can talk. I know, I was all worried too. I got to say, Glenn, thank you. When you came up to me when I came in and you told me God's got it, I knew that. You know, this whole thing, I did not want to speak tonight. I didn't even tell Jessica because I didn't, and then you fucking ratted me out. So what does she do? She blasts that shit all over Facebook? Yeah. I'm like, really? I love you. And it has been, you know, this journey has been amazing. Amazing. But there's, you know, there's this thing that they read at the end of our meetings, and I want to read it real fast. It's at the end of a vision for you. If you want what we have to offer, then you need to do what we do. If you want your life to quit being a shithole, then you're going to have to change it. And it doesn't happen by osmosis. You know, I listen to this guy, Bob Darrell, and he says, you know, there's a lot of people that need recovery. They're not going to get shit. There's a lot of people that want recovery, and they might do a little bit better, but unless you do the work, it's not going to stick. And what are you willing to do? What, you know, especially people talk about going and looking for a sponsor. Oh, I asked them, they said no. I said, man, if you were on a mission, right, and you went to someone, and you say, hey, would you be my, you know, hey, you got something? And they tell you no, what do you do?
Keep on.
You go to the next house. Yeah. And you keep going till you get what you need. So look at getting a sponsor the same way. If you're not getting, if someone says no, go ask someone else. Get over yourself. Because if you keep doing it your way, you're going to die. How many people we know that have died because of this disease? All right. So our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man that is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and for countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you know God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us, and we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And we will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Let's give Lindy another round of applause.